it from a marketing standpoint, it lets people know, like, hey, there's something going on right now.
We're doing some.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not just in a laboratory cooking this stuff up. It's actually happening.
That's right. There's a little delay, but they're pretty much going to get what,
yeah,
what comes up.
All right, so this one's not rolling. You got to remember to hit that one sometimes. We're good.
Yeah.
All right.
So
this is rolling. Hello, Facebook. I'm here with Mitchell. Two L's?
Two L's.
Mitchell with two L's. And we're going to talk about recovery and spirituality. I think that's pretty safe.
Yeah.
Blanket topic. And we haven't gotten together before. It's our first time really connecting. And so I thought it'd be great to just kind of start cold and let's just start talking and see where the conversation goes. Because I have a feeling that it could get interesting.
I think it might. I don't need the script. Oh, wait, I didn't bring it.
Oh, okay, good.
So I guess we're just going to have to talk about what we're thinking about.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about the episode we're going to release tonight, which is I interviewed a kid. And I say kid, he's, you know, 23, 22. And he had just recently relapsed on heroin and is on methadone, currently methadone treatment. And so in my conversation with him, I really got this sense that from his point of view, he was still using drugs because he was still a slave. He still in the morning had to get to the clinic, had to be there at a certain time.
Every day.
Methadone, every day.
No vacation.
Sundays, they're not open on Sunday. So
does he get a double dose on Saturday?
I don't know. I guess Saturday is even a shorter time frame. So it really seemed like he felt like he was still, which is, you know, it's tragic, but I thought he was willing to share his story, and I felt like, man, to have that story told right in the middle of that, right? I mean, we get to talk usually in this situation when we're years removed from our drug addiction, but to have somebody willing to talk about it in the midst of it was good. Removes the anonymity. I was thinking about that today, of one of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous or any of the anonymous meetings. But, you know, I feel like the good that can come out of him willing to share, for you to see it and hear it come in from his mouth when he's in the middle of this crisis, is, I think, could hopefully help other people, parents, or someone who's in the same state. Because, you know, when you hear it from a guy who's used to be like that, it's good. We can share strength and hope. But I think in him sharing his weakness, he shares a lot of strength and hope.
I remember sitting on the couch when I was in college using heroin at the time. And one of my favorite shows to watch was Intervention.
Yeah.
And it actually made me feel better because I had not hit that bottom yet. And I'm like, these people have problems.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I'm cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm maintaining. I'm in college. You know, I'm not living under a bridge. I don't have a needle in my arm.
Right.
Yet. So, you know.
You were smoking heroin?
It was insulfated, so snorting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I had a fear of needles, which
okay.
I think might have saved my life. So yeah, I'd watch the show, and I guess the beauty of that was that I knew at some level what that would look like, and so if I got there, hopefully I'd know I've arrived at this point.
Yes.
And many years later, it hit me sitting in my office in New York. All my people had gone to prison, were dead, or in rehab. And I was the only one left, but I was no longer removed from that equation. I was the next one.
Yeah.
And when it hit me hard, and I was too deep. I couldn't stop.
You couldn't get out.
I tried.
Yeah.
I started, you know, giving some efforts and hit a bottom very soon after that. And my bottom was, you know, dragged along the bottom until I said a prayer and got an answer and got a way out.
Yeah. So tell me about what's been your life experience with drugs and alcohol? I mean, did this stuff start at an early age for you, or?
So I think my perspective is that there was always something wrong with me. I was the kid that was bouncing off the walls at 2-3 years old. I was the kid who punched his kindergarten teacher in her stomach when she was pregnant.
Oh.
I was the kid teaching other kids bad words. I was helping other kids cut their hair, you know, at school,
right?
Which didn't work out very well. I was the kid who enjoyed getting in trouble without necessarily getting caught. that I committed my first felony when I was in third grade. I started selling Ace Ventura VHSs to my friends. Oh. So the black market was always attractive to me.
In elementary school?
Third grade.
It was interesting what you said was that you started off with saying that you knew something was different about you.
Well, I don't know that at the time I knew anything was different, but in hindsight, looking back, there was always something about me that was not normal.
Yeah.
And looking back at the history, my parents would take me to doctors, and there was a history of trying to figure out how to help me.
Right.
And it was hypothesized that maybe I had too much sugar in my diet.
Okay.
Until I eventually ended up in therapist seats and then psychiatrist seats, and it came to a point where they said, "Do you want us to help you?" And I said, "What does that look like?" This is about 16. And they said, "Well, you can't use drugs if we're going to give you medication." And I said, "Well, I'm not interested in not using drugs, so this conversation's over."
When did you start using drugs?
I drank a beer for the first time probably around 16. And very quickly escalated to smoking pot, taking acid, eating MDMA, mushrooms, painkillers. And I knew when I started taking painkillers that this was the one that was going to get me if one got me.
Yeah.
It was too good.
Yes.
It filled every hole inside of me that that made me suffer.
Yeah.
And eventually created so much pain that I had to reevaluate that as my solution.
Yeah. So it was the opiates.
The opiates, but the strange thing is I got away from the opiates in New York for the most part, and the cocaine, which I thought was safe for me, which had historically been a safe drug.
Safe
for me in that it didn't cause me that pain.
Okay.
You know, the withdrawal pain wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
But I'd never been in a cocaine psychosis before until I was in New York. And when you have...
What's a cocaine psychosis?
For me, the cocaine psychosis hit when I got enough funds and access to very potent cocaine to where I got to the point where I had to have it every day.
Yeah.
And my brain no longer resembled a normally functioning brain. It was completely driven by cocaine to the point where my family would be visiting in town and I'm hiding out in the bathroom in my New York condo for hours in the same space with my family.
Yeah.
And it didn't really bother me other than the fact that I knew I'd have to somehow navigate through those conversations afterwards.
Get out.
Yeah. Like how strange is that for someone to be in their bathroom for hours?
Right.
And I had a near death experience in that bathroom at one point, which was part of the initial turning point. And that was pretty scary.
Yeah. I think a lot of addicts would say that there was a moment in time early on when they felt like they weren't normal. You know, I feel like that's my experience too, is I felt like there was a point in my youth that I felt like, man, I'm not, something's different. I don't see the world the way everyone else sees it. Everyone else sees it as this, and things fit here and things fit there. And I just don't see it that way. And I wonder if there's any kind of early diagnosis of some of that. You know, and I'm sure your parents tried to figure all that stuff out. And
yeah, you know, they sent me on wilderness retreats. And I was in a category that made dealing with me a little different. My grades were always really good.
Yeah.
And so I was able to get away with more. And I learned that as long as your grades are good, you can wiggle this the way that you want it.
Right.
And I do remember, especially in middle school and high school, knowing that I didn't fit in, but I was always able to find people who saw things the way I saw them. And looking back, it's no surprise that those people are dead or in prison or in and out of treatment, and some of them have recovered.
Yeah.
No surprise. But at the time, I had no idea where we were all headed, and you can't know until you know.
No, that's very interesting. I feel like this, our stories are really similar in that sense, that most of the people that I used with during high school, you know, a lot of them are better now, but there are a lot of them that aren't, you know, and I've always thought, like, man, it's so crazy to be clean now, because this month I'll have 6 years clean, which is the longest extent of sobriety I've had since I was probably 10 or 11 years old. So it's a very new thing.
Every day is
like, what the heck is happening here? And it, you know, having that revelation, understanding that about myself was huge for me, because it kind of started putting things back in perspective a little bit, that, you know, I am still learning in a lot of ways, you know, that my thought patterns, my heart condition is different and changed and new. And I'm, if I was a newborn child, I'm only 6 years old in that sense. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So to understand that, hey, there's a lot more growth to do, and also to understand that it's okay to kind of be where I'm at, which is huge. To me, that's been the biggest spiritual breakthrough I've had this year, is understanding that it's okay if you're not okay. You just can't stay that way.
Right.
Yeah. So you said a prayer and it was answered. Tell me about that.
So...
wait, let's reset. Just that. Sorry.
Oh, we gotta reset. Yeah. You can just reset those while we roll.
Okay. Yeah. So I wasn't sure, but I was gonna do that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we don't even... you can just hit... just stop them and turn them back on. And just, we'll keep the conversation rolling.
Crap, am I doing wrong?
Okay. You got it. You're rolling. All right.
That one's recording?
Yeah. Good.
So if you've ever gotten out of the lines on the highway, on either side of the highway, you hear a brrrr to let you know if you're asleep, you need to wake up.
Right.
Or if you're distracted, you're a little off track. So I was very off track. And at that point, my buddy, who we somewhat grew up together, he was less inebriated than me, so he was the driver at that point in time.
Right.
And I couldn't keep my eyes open from sleep deprivation and, you know, my level of intoxication. So I remember flashes from that ride home from Miami where I would hear that noise and wake up and he was swerving off the road. So that tells you, you know, where I was at as far as intoxication. It was bad. And it hit me at that point that we had a long trip to make. We weren't getting any more sober and we weren't getting any more sleep. And for whatever reason, because of the amount of felonies in the car and the budget that we had to get home, because we had a rough time in Miami, we literally calculated we couldn't stop until we got home. So it was the impossible situation.
Yeah.
You haven't slept for days.
Wow.
If you get pulled over, you're going to prison. If you stop driving, you're going to run out of gas because you don't have the amount of gas it would take to cool off your car to sleep. You don't have money for a place to stay. And your only hope is to try to get back to Atlanta on this tank of gas.
Yeah.
So at one of those points, I saw a police officer and I realized we're either going to die, we're going to take some people out with us, and we're most likely going to prison somehow, some way on this trip. We couldn't even find all the felonies in the car. We'd lost some of them. So, you know, I knew it was a...
I like how you could just call them felonies.
That's, yeah, there, I mean, really, there were different types. I like that. Different types. So...
it's wise as the camera records.
So I knew I was in a precarious situation, and I didn't have a spiritual practice. I grew up in the church, but the church didn't really... agree with the way that I behaved, and so I distanced myself from the church. But it's interesting how in seemingly every man, woman, and child there is this understanding of prayer or some type of higher power.
Yeah.
And so
especially in that impossible situation,
in a very dire moment, a person who doesn't pray and hasn't prayed for many, many years, who thinks prayer is foolish and that religion is a joke, said a prayer. And the prayer was, if you get me back, I'll give this up. And I tried. I did try. It was my first real attempt. And it ended up, when it didn't work, of course, rebounding on me, and ended up in New York, almost dying in that bathroom that I had spent so much time in. And at that point, I reached out to my guardian angel, my mother, and she said, you need to go to rehab. And it had never clicked.
I was, you never that, even considered that.
I was that far off the path that I didn't know what I needed. just knew that what I was doing wasn't working.
Right.
And I tried every possible way to make my life work, and it ended up in a place of desperation and hopelessness. And so I took the advice because I was in that moment that I needed help.
Yeah.
So the funny part of the story is that I didn't think that, you know, smoking marijuana had anything to do with my problem. So of course I needed a rehab where I could smoke weed. I thought it was the pills and the powders.
Did those exist?
I couldn't find them. So I looked. I figured if you went to Canada, Colorado, or California, right, they would totally give you what you needed.
Right. You couldn't find it.
Couldn't find it. So my backup plan was to go to a rehab where I heard they had great food because I was underweight from the cocaine. I was hungry. No money. I had bounced every check possible, so to speak, mm-hmm. and indebted in every way, and had gone from living the American dream, running my own company, you name it, in Manhattan, living, you know, in the nicest neighborhood in the world, conceivably, to I didn't have a penny to my name, and I couldn't get Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Hiding my car from the repo, it was ugly. So, went to rehab.
Another impossible situation.
For me, rehab seemed like vacation.
Yeah.
It was a possibility at having some time where I could de-stress.
Yeah.
My bills were taken care of, and my motives were selfish. I needed to be in a place where I was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out that they had the help that I really needed.
Yeah.
Which was suggestions to look into spirituality and look at my entire scope of unhealthy behaviors, not just the ones that were causing me immediate pain and suffering.
Right. Yeah. Well, you're talking about behavior, and you mentioned that you grew up in church, but because your behavior, they didn't agree with your behavior, that you felt like that was no longer a safe place for you.
Not only that, I thought they were wrong because I found a solution that worked for me. And so if you didn't agree with me, you must be wrong.
Oh, right.
So I took that to the very end, to the point where I was reading some spiritual literature after going to detox, and the literature proposed, who are you to say there's no God?
Right.
And I'm sitting here in a place where I can't even have shoelaces because I could be a suicide risk. I'm not really in a position to say that I know how things should operate or do operate. And so I reconsidered my conclusions that I made as a teenager and a drug addict.
Yeah. Adult. How old were you when you were in rehab?
I went to rehab November 9th, 2011.
Oh, it's on your arm.
Yeah, I can't get too far away from that one.
Yeah.
My memory, you know, I probably suffer some brain damage from many different events. So I have to make sure that I keep things close.
Yeah.
Close by. So
2011, so you're at about 6 years as well.
God willing, 2017 will be my sixth year in November. Yeah.
Yeah. Same here. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Serendipitous, is that was the word you were
Serendipity
using?
Is all over if your eyes are open, it seems like.
Yeah.
If your spirit is awakening or awakened. There's some trail markers, as I call them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be in a rough spot and I'll see something and it'll connect with me spiritually, and I'll say to myself, you're on the right path.
Yeah.
Or you need to go toward that path.
Yeah.
And so far it's been helpful.
It's like Neo in the Matrix where the cat walks by.
I don't remember that because...
Did you see a cat?
I don't remember that because that was during a period that I didn't form too many memories, but I did a lot of camping when I was younger, and there were trail markers, and you had faith in them, and they got you where you needed to go.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the way you described your kind of acknowledgement of God or a higher power, because it was this... It's not so much like... okay, here's these set of things. I'm believing in those set of things, and I'm going to align myself to those set of things and move forward. It was actually quite the opposite. You were saying, I don't know what I believe anymore, and I know that I'm not... It's a place of serenity. It's a place of surrender, I mean, where you kind of go, I know I'm not the one in control.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of as far as the thought needs to get, really. Right?
I knew I was wrong.
Right.
It was the first time I was able to admit my plan didn't work. My ideas didn't get me where I thought they were going to get me. So perhaps the roadmap I was using was not accurate or appropriate. And perhaps I needed to look at another way. So I was completely open to it. Yeah. No more ideas. Out of ideas.
Yes. Which I think is a great place to be just as a human, period. It's kind of, me and my wife were talking today, and she wants to write a goal board out. Yeah. I was like, I'm done with goals. I'm done with plans. I can't, it stresses me out too much. And what was interesting for me is as soon as I kind of start letting go of the plans and the ideas that I had for ourselves and for our future, was when I was able to kind of get back to the moment. And then it's this really paradox kind of thing where once I'm able to get back to the moment is when I actually end up working on the plan that I ended up kind of wanting to do anyway.
A lot of paradoxes in this path.
Yes, there is. And I think once you realize that, it's a great weight lifted off, right?
Yeah.
So tell me again. So you're in the rehab. You do this. You surrender. And then what?
Well, yeah, it's easy to surrender when you're given no more real options other than leaving. And you know there's no other place you can go.
Right.
So at first they handed me this book. And, you know, it could have been any spiritual book. But my first thought was, I didn't read my textbooks in college. I'm not interested in reading your textbook about how I need to live.
Right.
But through attending different gatherings of people who showed strength, hope, and experience in living a healthy lifestyle that had been where I'd been, I made a connection and I wanted to know how they got there. So I looked at the tools they had and then became willing to reevaluate using things like books that I had set aside for many years. And I used to love to read books when I was a kid. So when I got back into some of this literature,
yeah,
I couldn't get enough of it.
Now you said that they had tools that you saw you wanted. What were those tools?
So some of the tools were different types of gatherings of people that were committed to helping each other and living healthier lifestyles. And they showed, interestingly enough, what I would consider to be scientific evidence or proof that their methods worked. And my background is I got a Bachelor of Science in Psychology while intoxicated, but I was always at the mindset that I need proof. And you couldn't prove to me that there was a God, so we weren't going to talk about that.
Right.
We could talk about science. And interestingly enough, it was my first experience with a statistically significant proven method that involves spirituality.
Yeah.
It was the only way that I had seen people recover from essentially a death sentence. And they say we get a daily reprieve, which means we have to work on our spiritual condition daily.
Yeah.
And a reprieve is typically for someone who's got a death sentence.
Right.
Wow. And so I started connecting these dots and literally had what I can only describe as spiritual experiences where for the first time I was getting rushes of whether you call them endorphins or energy that made me feel good without having to consume a substance. I'd never really experienced much of that. And so when I started getting that on this path, I knew there was something to this.
Yeah. Joy. Joy. Would joy be a good word for that?
Joy, hope. And then, you know, hope with a track record ended up being faith.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Hope with a track record becomes faith.
It did for me.
I like that.
They gave me a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
I followed their lead and
that's good hope stuff.
And progress and more hope and progress. Eventually I started to have faith in what I was doing and enough faith to lend a hand out to other people and say, hey, this seems to have saved my life. I'd like to help you with this.
Yeah.
With no other motives than to do the right thing and to hopefully help myself stay on that path because you kind of become like a link in a chain.
Yeah.
And if you got your hand out to someone who's been down the path and is leading you the right way, hopefully you can pull someone else down that way and you are then secured into a chain of people who are headed toward the light, so to speak, or out of the darkness.
Yeah.
And that was very cool.
Yeah. Well, what you're describing is a community. And there's a Facebook group that somebody added me to. It's like a recovery community in Atlanta.
ATL.
Yeah.
Recovery.
And
it's a closed group.
I could probably cry talking about the stuff I see on there.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
I need help. I feel alone. And it's just this flutter of, call me. Here's my number. Call me, I'm here for you. Where are you at? Or I need a place to stay.
People that don't even know each other.
Yes. It is beautiful to see it is to me the perfect church. It's the perfect community of people who are willing to say, wherever you're at, here I am, here's my number. I don't know that I could do that in my Christian community and get that kind of response.
Right.
And so I'm critical of Christianity because I am a Christian, so I feel like I kind of can be, right? And so when I look at this, just a Facebook group, I mean, really, like, what's a Facebook group going to do? And here it is, really actually doing good. So kudos to anybody who's, like, in that group and participating.
It's one of those tools that when the student is ready, the teacher appears, so to speak, when you're ready and open to help. And if your experience is anything like mine, you realize there are all these tools at your fingertips that are invaluable and can help save your life and other people's lives.
Yeah.
It's a pretty incredible awakening that you can't unlearn that. And even if we fall short and if we relapse and if we fall off path,
yeah,
at least we know they're there for next time. And so I didn't know any of this. And so I even feel confident that if for some reason I ended up in a position where I made some really poor choices, at least I would know there was a path to get back on. I didn't even know there was a path.
Yeah.
I didn't even know I was off a path. I had no idea. I thought it was chaos and everybody was out for themselves.
Right.
So to know that there are paths toward, you know, beautiful places.
Yeah.
Albeit, you know, filled with struggle.
Yes.
It's nice to know that you could get back on the path or you can share the way to the path with other people.
Well, I think that's the definition of beauty to me now has changed, because I think beauty is not without struggle. That beauty is with the blemish. It's with the imperfection. I mean, to truly be connected and love somebody, you can't just love only the good parts. At least that's not real love, right? You have to kind of have this understanding of their completeness, and that to me is really beauty, because you're connecting to all of them, not just the good side of them or the well-behaved side of them, right? You're connecting to their whole being. And I think that in the recovery community, you see examples of that continuing. So you're a psychology major. How much of that do you still carry around with you as you think through these things?
I think psychology was helpful in allowing me to better understand human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so the interesting thing about my studies in psychology is I started looking in the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders in college to try and diagnose myself.
Wow.
And some of the stuff certainly was apparent that I may be in a certain category for this or for that. And so that was somewhat alarming.
Yeah.
But denial is very strong.
Yeah.
And I'd prefer to think that I can figure a way through this. And I'm already on this path with momentum to where I'm already involved. And the interesting thing was that I knew that worst case scenario, as long as I survived, I would know enough about what it was that I was studying by being part of it.
Yeah.
That I could hopefully help people one day. Yeah. And talk about it.
Right.
But I was in too deep to really do much about that. I knew I was on a ride at that point.
Yeah.
And hopefully I would be able to use it for good one day.
Yeah. Doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, and then it leads you to an actual
That's very interesting
good
how it,
place.
Very interesting how it worked out.
Yeah. So tell me about your life now, as our office line rings.
It was a lot of phone calls on the phone all the time. And I have this tool available at my disposal where I know if I don't feel okay, that I need to be on the phone with some people who understand and can relate and maybe can share their experience, strength, and hope, because people have been through what I've been through and I've learned that. And so making sure I have access to those people and reach out to them is important. And then on those good days when I feel at peace, it's important for me to be on the phone reaching out to other people in an effort to maybe help them out.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting how I can't do this alone.
Do you ever talk yourself out of calling someone?
I used to.
Yeah.
I used to think, or I would call them, but I would hope they didn't answer.
Oh, yeah.
So that hasn't happened in a long time. I am fully aware now of how much help I need.
Yeah.
And the struggles ahead of me.
Yeah.
That now it's like a drowning man grasping for a life preserver. I need it. I want it. I know it's not always going to be pretty or pleasant to hear, but I need to know the truth. And sometimes I can get off track.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. You talked a little bit before we started recording about, and I think this was one of the things that you first brought up when we were talking about connecting, was the work you're doing with a local area church or something,
right,
the school. And you want to tell us a little bit about what that is about?
Yeah, so my career prior to 2011 was focused on commerce and business, whether it was legal or illegal. And so I identified a natural ability to make myself and other people around me wealthy. And I also identified on that path that was a self-destructive path for me. So I appreciate commerce and I appreciate business people. And I had to bow out of that industry because I knew for me, it was not the path that I could be most effective. And I knew it wasn't the path that was going to enrich me to the point where I could stay on a path toward health and wellness.
Now, was that an easy transition?
No, nothing about this has been easy, but it has all been very worthwhile. So
yeah.
I remembered this point in time where I'd volunteered and how it made me feel. And it was nice to, for once, not be focused on how much money can I get out of you?
Yes.
While still making sure that you're getting compensated well for your money, but how much money can I get out of you?
Yeah, yeah.
That's no longer my primary focus. And while business is necessary, at the end of the day, most every decision I make is based first and foremost on, is this best for you? Is this best for me? Is this viable? Is this sustainable? And if we can make a little money, that's cool. If we can just break even, but move forward as people and as organizations, that's enough for me.
Right.
So going from living in, you know, a condo in Manhattan and not really having to worry about money, in the sense that bills were always paid and there was a lot of extra money to do what I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I chose a life where every penny counts, and even on paper, the business models don't always make sense, but because I believe in them,
right,
I find a way.
Wow. That's crazy. It's so, like, they say you're reading my mail. Is that what they say?
I don't know. I've never heard that.
You never heard that?
No.
Or what you said is you're speaking my language.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The thing that I've been thinking through as we've made kind of a similar transition is, you know, there's always a cost to life, period, to every day. And whatever you choose to do, there's going to be some sort of cost. Whether you're paying that cost, someone else is paying that cost. And I think to choose a life that's maybe leveraging yourself for the wellness of others and not just financially thinking, that there is a cost for that, right? I mean, you have to be, you can't be consumed all day with meetings and calls and emails and business and this. You have to give yourself room to be open to take those phone calls and to be in a community. And once you do that, you do kind of, it does cost you a little bit on that, whatever is perceived as success in the American world, right?
That
makes sense.
When I think about what you're saying, it to me, it seems like a small cost to get the medicine I need for a terminal progressive illness that will kill me and will destroy everything around me that I've worked hard to build. So on the outside, a lot of people, I think, have a difficult time imagining how someone would commit to a path of financial struggle. But when you've been where I've been and you see how this path keeps you away from the gates of hell,
right,
and hell can be on earth, it's a small price to pay.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather deal with the struggle of checking my bank account every day and paying my debts and going to sleep at night feeling good, knowing I haven't screwed anybody over, than trying to navigate a selfish path that is really only focused on an unattainable goal of getting everything I possibly ever want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. It's good stuff. Yeah. So did you want to talk about the work with the middle school?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I end up with these amazing opportunities And one of the opportunities was based on work I was doing with a school, and they agreed to hire me to build an agricultural system based on aquaponics. So basically it's a hydroponic system where fish provide nutrients for the plants clean the water for the fish. That's the simplified explanation. But it's cool, and you can talk about science around it, and it is something that I enjoy doing, and it's challenging, and I knew the kids would probably dig it.
Yeah.
So it's also part of the startup that I have been working on, and the more systems we have, the more we learn, the more exposure we have. So it made good business sense to me to work with the school with a very limited budget. And in the process, I was given opportunities to work with the kids, which was actually the most rewarding part of this process, because I got to see the spark in their eyes that I didn't get until I was much older for things like this.
Right.
And I got to see that they were actually in a position to work on skills that I had yet to really work on and master as an adult. And then I got to work with them to the point where I saw their work and saw their deliverables and realized some of these kids are prodigies and they're brilliant.
Yeah.
And they will be heavily recruited when they're old enough to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to be able to help them fine tune these skills in a way that not only makes an interesting project, helps them advance as smaller humans, but also at the end of the day, as a businessman, provide some deliverables. So they built my website with direction. They built 3D models of different systems I'm working on that can be used for demonstrations and videos and websites and social media. And not only that, the school has agreed to extend the internship to the point where it will be a quarterly internship based on different levels to where they can progress through the basic internship to an apprenticeship to a journeyman level to a master, where they then teach the next upcoming class what they learned, and the cycle continues.
And so they're learning like this hydroponic technology and also some of these other things like 3D modeling, website building.
And the hydroponics is just a subject matter. It could be anything. And so I see other companies seeing what we're going to do and what we've done and saying, hey, we'd like to get involved with this. And what we're doing is actually something completely different. We're promoting exercise for adults with disabilities. And we would like to update our website, and we'd like to have some different media made.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could get in on this.
Right.
And then they could help take the torch, because I can't necessarily always do this, and it'd be nice to see other people benefit from it and give back as well.
Right. That's cool. I'm also thinking of like, not every middle school is going to have a bucket of kids that are ready for this kind of stuff, right?
No, they've been primed for it. It's one of the top 10 technology schools in the nation.
Right.
I prefer not to throw their name out there, as I don't know that they would necessarily approve all of what I speak about publicly, but
That's cool.
I have great respect for them. And
But I do feel like no matter what, middle school or high school, even elementary, that there is always one or two or a few kids who could use that kind of challenge, right? To kind of get out of whatever's just kind of being fed to them. I'm getting a call in the middle of this.
Nice.
We're not going to take it. Sorry.
So I saw that with one student.
Yeah.
And she clearly was having a tough time, as I'm sure most seventh grade girls do.
Mm-hmm.
And she gravitated toward this in a way where she created, in my opinion, a masterpiece for a seventh grade. I was blown away.
Yeah.
And so there was no plan to do this internship. But based on her work, it made sense to me as a business person to offer her an opportunity, because she technically can't even get paid for this at this point.
Right.
It's against child labor laws. But we can work it through an educational operation to where she learns and we benefit.
Yeah.
So in that process, I feel like she was having a tough time socially, and she got something else to focus on and put her energy into. And where most kids, I think, were probably doing a lot of socializing over the summer.
Yeah.
She may have been. But if she wasn't, she certainly had an outlet for that energy. Yeah. And I think on the flip side, it's going to give her the opportunity to find a whole new network of people who are interested in these type of technologically advanced artistic endeavors that might be her people or her tribe.
Yeah.
And I think she's building a portfolio at seventh and eighth grade that could rival some kids, you know, we call them kids, college kids at Savannah College of Art and Design. So the portfolio she's building and where she's at now,
cool.
I imagine that if she's able to stay on a healthy path, she will be unstoppable.
Yeah.
And she might have found an identity that she might not have found otherwise earlier.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Do you want to give out your website?
My website is Flowponics.
Flowponics.
F as in Frank.
Sound like a hip-hop group from the 90s.
Flowponics. Well, I'm hooked on ponics. It's kind of the tagline. Flowponics. So ponics means to do work, and hydroponics means to let the water do the work. And aquaponics means to let the water and the fish do the work. And flowponics means let's bring all these different types of work together and do the best work, whether it's soil, hydroponics, aquaponics, aeroponics. Let's incorporate systems and have them interact. And
nice.
And on the bigger scale, let's find the flow in the community and let's feed people who don't necessarily have access to great food while also providing the top quality food available to even the highest end restaurants. And let's basically help everybody at whatever level we can and stay on a path that keeps us motivated.
It's good stuff.
So we're flowing.
We're flowing.
I feel like I'm flowing.
Yeah. I feel like Flowponics is like a rap group from the Bay Area, like on E40's label.
Yeah, I can see that. We could get hyphy, as they call
it. Well, it's been great talking to you, and I'm so glad that we got to connect. And interestingly, we do it in front of cameras rather than just talking normally as normal humans. But I think it's been great, and I'm looking forward to, you know, how we can continue to build. And we're always looking for more people to come in and do like what you just did. Share your strength and hope. Share what you've been through and what you're doing now. And that there is, we do recover. And that a life beyond addiction can be a beautiful life, hope-giving life worth living.
If you would have told me that my idea of fun would change, I would have never believed you. But the things that I used to find fulfilling that were destructive don't hold a candle to the real love and joy that I've found in authentic experiences. And then the drugs were just a lie.
Yeah.
They were telling myself the same lie over and over and over again. And the love you experience with a child or spending quality time with family where you're actually present or enriching your community.
Actually present.
When you experience that in a sober mind state, it blows away any type of experience you may have had that was meaningful or impactful, typically on drugs and alcohol, at least if you're anything like me.
Yeah. Sweet, man. Appreciate you, brother.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Thank you.